On this week's edition of New York Now, will they or won't they? Democrats say they could return to Albany in the next 2 weeks to pass tax hikes on the rich.
The governor even said he knows we need revenue.
Amanda Fries from the Times Union and Bernadette Hogan from the New York Post are with me in studio to discuss. Then, Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins joins me to chat about the state's budget crisis and what Democrats have planned for next year. And the state's opioid crisis got worse during the pandemic. We'll tell you what some want to do about it. I'm Dan Clark, and this is New York Now.
Today, the Senate majority will pass legislation.
We will pass a law prohibiting it, and we will take them to court challenging it.
Welcome to this week's edition of New York Now. I'm Dan Clark. The big question in New York right now is what to do about the state's $15 billion budget deficit. And as we've told you, there's a lot of different ideas for filling that gap. One of them is raising taxes on the rich, which Democrats in the legislature actually support. We were expecting that to be a big issue next year when lawmakers return to Albany in January. But as it turns out, that could be happening sooner than we thought. Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie said this week that lawmakers could still come back to Albany before the end of the year to pass new taxes on the wealthy.
And so we're just having conversations back and forth based on what our members have said to us about the possibility of maybe coming back to do some of the hot button issues, looking at revenue. The governor even said he knows we need revenue.
But Governor Cuomo came out a few days later and basically said no thanks. Not because he's against raising taxes on the wealthy, but because he wants to wait for a stimulus package from Congress before making any big moves. He says that will help the state decide how much to raise taxes and if there needs to be any cuts. Here he is this week.
You can't divorce a tax increase from a budget action. I can do it either way. But you have to do a tax increase in the context of a budget. Otherwise, you don't know how much to raise in taxes. Otherwise, it's just a political gesture.
So let's talk about it with Amanda Fries from the Albany Times Union and Bernadette Hogan from the New York Post. Thank you both for joining me.
Thanks.
So the big question is, are we coming back this year? I guess we have 2 weeks left in the year. Lawmakers could come back to the Capitol. I would say it's unlikely. Bern, what are you hearing?
Right. So we have 2 weeks until January 1st, start of next session. Lawmakers and Governor Cuomo are really pressured to raise money to close this massive revenue gap, mainly caused by the coronavirus pandemic. It's going to be tough. Lawmakers are going to actually have a plan with or without the governor. So right now, I'm not sure. The state Senate, they had a retreat last week, and the state assembly had one, and by retreat within conference, to see what their priorities would be and what they need to do. I heard that the state Senate has not spoken since last week as one big conference, and the state assembly, Speaker Carl Hastie, the leader of the Democrats, he said that he does want to come back potentially to raise taxes on at least the wealthiest of New Yorkers, and it remains to be seen.
I will say, in just a few minutes on the show, we have Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins, and we will ask her if they're going to come back by the end of the year, so stick around for that. Mandy, what are your predictions? Do you think lawmakers are going to be coming back sometime in the next few weeks?
It remains to be seen, just like Bern said. However, we also have the eviction moratorium,
right,
which for a lot of folks have argued it's not a real eviction moratorium, so they're hoping to have legislators come back, strengthen the moratorium, and extend it for a longer period of time. That is expiring at the end of the year, January 1. That's the expiration date. So if legislators want to address the concern of an eviction crisis and a housing crisis, I would anticipate they probably really do need to come back before the end of the year.
So it's expiring January 1st. The governor, of course, has the power to extend this because he still has the emergency powers. He just hasn't done so yet.
Right.
I think they extended the commercial eviction moratorium either last week or earlier this week. It all kind of blends together. So we could see something from the governor today. We're taping Friday or sometime in the next few weeks on that. But it is a really important issue. And you're right. The speaker said, Speaker Carl Hastie said, they have to come back before the end of the year.
To
or to some extent, maybe negotiate with the governor to do something like that. But Let's talk about taxing the rich, because that seems to be the big disagreement this week.
Right.
So Carl, the speaker, says they want to come back to tax the rich. Mandy, what is the governor saying?
He doesn't want to do it right now.
He never really wants to do it, right? I mean, it's not even like a right now thing, but he has acknowledged that they will have to raise taxes, but we don't know what taxes, right?
Right. And, both the governor as well as his budget director, Rob Mujica, has mentioned that if they raise taxes on the wealthiest New Yorkers, they will leave New York. On the other side of things, you have folks who will say that that's not necessarily true, that it doesn't actually bear out, in fact. So we're going to have to wait and see. The question is whether the governor has the appetite to raise taxes on the wealthiest New Yorkers. There is strong support. We've seen the surveys that show that New Yorkers support raising taxes on the wealthiest.
Right, exactly. And Bern, you had some behind-the-scenes reporting on that this week. Tell us about that.
Right. So yesterday, the governor did have a meeting with labor leaders about this exact topic, saying he expressed his pleasure, needless to say, about Carl Hastie's encouragement to raise taxes on the wealthiest. And now it's not just this blanket raise tax on the wealth. There's a host of different proposals. This pied-à-terre tax, which is on multiple homes, one owner, stock transfer tax, several different proposals that really haven't been put into place prior. So the governor, you know, he met with these labor leaders and he said, I need your help here. I need your support because I can't be muscled around on this. And it's also, you know, he does want to come to a conclusion, a compromise at the end of the day, whether that's with the legislative leaders or with him saying, hey, I have a coalition of support and we actually don't have a majority of, you know, the general populace saying let's raise taxes on the wealthy. However, you know, he is saying he's holding out for Washington. What that looks like, how much are we going to get from Washington? I don't know. But at the end of the day, he is talking about raising taxes, potential layoffs, budget cuts. Something's going to have to be done because over the next 2 years, we have nearly $30 billion predicted in estimated revenue losses. So
it's huge. It's crazy.
It's massive.
It's like an insurmountable amount of money that the state has. I don't know, dating back to however, I don't know how this compares to historically, but it's more than we've seen in over a decade.
Right, but it's not something that can't be at least mitigated to some degree. Remember last year we had that massive Medicaid deficit that did end up getting fixed to a degree with MRT2. Mm-hmm. Of course, fixed is also, it's still in motion, but there are ways to close the gaps. However, the loss of revenue here is pretty insurmountable.
Mandy, before we run out of time, Deputy Commissioner of Economic Development, former Lindsay Boylan, now running for Manhattan Borough President, has accused the governor of sexual harassment. In the past few days, the story has kind of faded away. Do you think it'll stick to the governor?
I imagine it will. We have to kind of wait and see. Ms. Boylan has taken to Twitter to express her grievances and has even said on Twitter that she is not willing to speak with any reporters about her allegations. So as reporters, we're going to be left to hopefully either hearing from her again via Twitter or other people coming forward.
Right, and the governor did deny the allegations the other day when he was asked about it. But again, we don't know what those specific allegations are until we speak to Lindsay.
Exactly. Well, we'll see where it goes. Amanda Fries from the Times Union, Bernadette Hogan from the New York Post. Thank you both so much.
Thanks for having us.
Democrats in the Senate aren't ruling out a return to Albany this month either, but the legislature has a big year ahead. Even if they don't come back before the start of session in January, the budget gap is expected to be the top priority for lawmakers, but they're planning to work on other issues as well, like relief for tenants and the state's election system. I spoke this week with Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins, who's heading back to Albany with a new supermajority of members. Take a look. Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins, thanks so much for being here.
It's good to be here with you.
So I think we can both agree that a top issue facing the legislature and the state overall is its finances. The state is facing a budget deficit north of $10 billion. You may be back in December, or if not, you'll be back in January. But whenever you do come back to Albany, do you have any immediate plans for addressing the budget crisis? I know there have been a lot of ideas thrown out there.
Well, as you said, the deficit is huge. We are looking at just a number of possibilities, clearly, from revenue raisers to, we're just trying to figure it out. Our big hope, as I always say, is that we have a federal government that actually is a partner with us and will look at state and local governments not as the enemy, not as a blue state bailout, but as part of what government does to show that it actually functions. So we are hoping that whatever it is, it will help us out of an extremely desperate situation, and certainly one that New York can recover from once we get this virus under control. So I think, like every other state, our only focus is getting rid of the virus and rebuilding our economy. But of course, in the interim, we are concerned about the toll that it's taking on so many New Yorkers. And so to the extent that we can avoid people losing their homes and really getting crushed under the weight of the economics of this virus, we want to be helpful in that way too.
You bring up a really good point about people losing their homes, and I'm thinking about tenants. What can we expect from the Senate and Democrats in the Senate? I don't want to have you speak for the Assembly, obviously, but do you have any plans for providing some relief for tenants? We know that the eviction moratorium is kind of ongoing, it's kind of fuzzy, but what can we expect in the immediate future?
Well, I think what we want is clarity, because we don't want fuzziness, and obviously we're still in the midst of a pandemic, and circumstances unfortunately have changed, but not to the extent where people can go back to their lives as they've known them. So you can expect for us to do exactly what we continue to do, which is find ways that we can clear up the fuzziness, keep people in their homes, and overcome the virus. So then we can worry about the next steps. But we are absolutely concerned about eviction and trying to figure out a way that people can stay in their homes, keep their homes, and feel at least that level of security as we go forward.
Some Democrats have called for the legislature to come back into session immediately and pass tax hikes on the rich. Of course, this is part of the conversation about the deficit overall. I know that people are pushing for you to come back this month in December. Are you planning a return back to Albany before the end of the year?
Again, we're not planning or not planning. What we are doing is trying to figure out what makes sense. The budget hole is extremely large. Our opportunities to fill that hole, are debatable, especially within, the next couple of weeks. So there is a reality to coming back. When we come back, we want to make sure that we are at least doing things that will help the people who are most desperate for help. That is the bottom line of why I would be coming back.
Do you think when you do come back, whether it's this month or next month, you will have an immediate package of something to pass in terms of tax hikes, revenue raises, or do you think that it will be a wait and see in terms of waiting for President-elect Joe Biden to come into office and possibly negotiate that aid package for the state?
Well, the thing is, I have a revenue working group. We have worked extremely well together, and this is a way that I get all of the various voices and ideas to the table. So we do have things that we are working on and feel comfortable with. So we always like to be prepared and with certain solutions. So we are definitely working on that. So I think all of the above is true. And as we get into whatever we do this year, if we do anything, obviously we will start session technically on January 6th and it begins, but we will have things that we can bring to the table that we feel confident will be helpful. As I said, I don't think anybody should feel that we alone in this state government can do everything to get us out of the hole, which, as you said, is northward now of $10 billion for this current fiscal year, and then for the next, it's $16 billion. The hole is large, and so no one should think that we could come up with that much money as a state. So whatever we do, we are desperately in need of federal assistance, and I continue to underscore that because that is the reality.
You know, switching gears, because I don't want to just talk to you about the budget. When you first won the majority 2 years ago, and you came into office with the first Democratic majority in about 10 years in the Senate, you really hit the ground running with a lot of really big bills, like the Reproductive Health Act, enshrining abortion protections into state law, the Child Victims Act, a lot of really big things that you've been pushing for a long time. Now you're going back to Albany with 43 seats, three more seats than you had in the last session. Do you have anything that you want to get done immediately? What are your top priorities as you come into Albany with this bigger, stronger majority?
Well, first of all, you mentioned some important things, but I want to remind New Yorkers that for the first time we had early voting. That was the very first thing that we did when we came in with this majority, because we understand how important that franchise is. And we've done a number of things to expand the franchise as well. So one of the things that we'll definitely be doing when we come back is passing for the second time the constitutional amendment that will allow for us to have no excuse absentee voting, so that in our future, which is so unpredictable, clearly, we will have the whole range of options. So, yeah, you know, coming back now with the supermajority, it's heartening, because first of all, it says that New Yorkers liked what we did, that we did hit the ground running, we did extraordinary things, whether it was on climate or women's rights or MWBE, you know, the list goes on, you know, police reform, so everything, and people liked it, so they sent us back. And that's incredible. But because we are faced with this pandemic that has taken the lives of so many of our family members and this, you know, people we know, and we have not gotten that under control, it's hard to really think of anything that would be more important than that. So it's obviously recovering from this pandemic, you know, in terms of our health as well as our economy. And then, you know, we will be able to continue to you know, do the kinds of things that New Yorkers expect us to do with, again, a stronger majority than ever.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens in January, or if you're up here sooner. Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Dan. It's good to see you.
So another issue the state will have to deal with next year is a rise in the opioid epidemic. Reports from around the state have shown a huge spike in drug overdoses during the COVID-19 pandemic. And we don't really know why, but lawmakers say the issue is going to need more attention as the state recovers from the pandemic. Producer Nicole Van Slyke and I have that story.
As the world continues to grapple with the COVID-19 pandemic, there's another medical crisis in New York that's continued to evolve in the background, as it has for years, and may have grown worse because of the virus.
The opioid crisis was in full gear, and when COVID hit, we were calling the that it was a pandemic of addiction and overdose deaths. So the COVID really exacerbated in a lot of ways the addiction crisis. Many people who were in recovery have had a real tough time with the social isolation, plus the stress and the anxiety that people were feeling, the depression from the isolation. All of that led to, I think, an increase in sort of self-medication. But for people who had an active addiction, it created a much more stressful environment for people.
I think as we kind of get out of this COVID-19 pandemic, it's really important for us to remember that this is in fact a very serious issue, a serious issue that's been exacerbated by the pandemic, and we need to continue to make strategic investments so we can flatten the curve in terms of the amount of overdose deaths that we're seeing.
Data on the number of drug overdoses in New York from this year won't be published until sometime next year, but anecdotal evidence appears to show an increase in areas across the state during the pandemic.
Part of the problem is the data is not complete. Some counties are very good at reporting, others are not. Some coroners stopped doing inquisitions because they were so swamped with COVID fatalities. But what we're hearing from the counties that report and from our first responders and from the recovery community is that there's absolutely a spike that's not abating. So it's not like it was just a little blip because of the pandemic, and now it's gone away.
While news reports from different counties have shown a spike in overdose deaths at times this year, people familiar with the opioid crisis say that's been a common trend across the state.
The number of deaths, you know, the number of overdose deaths has risen dramatically in communities across New York State and across the country. We've seen numerous times in the newspapers between March and now, where you might have 25 people who died in a relatively short period of time. There were a number of counties that had higher death rates from the opioid overdoses and other overdoses. It wasn't just opioids, but drug and alcohol related deaths, you know, where they exceeded, you know, the COVID deaths.
While it's become more and more apparent that the isolation, anxiety, and fear from COVID-19 has added to the opioid crisis this year, it's not the only way the pandemic has affected the addiction crisis here in New York.
If you can remember, when the hospitals were ordered to increase their capacity by 50%, and it was very specifically about creating the capacity to address COVID. And so one of the things that happened was if you had a detox unit or you had an inpatient rehab, what you might have done is you might have converted those beds to COVID beds. And there are a good number of hospitals that once we got through the first wave, and some hospitals recommissioned those beds, but some did not. So you had a situation where hospitals were less able to serve the needs of people needing detox or needing, you know, inpatient rehab. And so community-based organizations really had to kind of pick up the burden of that. Unfortunately, without the benefit of protective equipment very frequently.
A lot of the service providers were not listed as essential, so they didn't get PPE. So they were not protected the way, you know, other health care professionals were. Not that they were all protected greatly, but you know, they didn't have access to PPE, masks, etc.
So we as a state and as a nation have chronically underfunded this field of our health system, behavioral health. And this segment, substance use disorder and mental health, did not receive any of the money from the federal government that our hospitals got. So it was a double whammy. They've lost revenue because of the inpatient facilities cannot accommodate as many people anymore. Demand is up and people have less insurance. So it's kind of a perfect storm that has come together.
This statewide crisis has brought lawmakers together across party lines to support a stimulus package or relief funding to support community partners, recovering addicts, and education efforts.
I mean, we have the tools, we just don't have the will. And that's really what I'm very distraught about as the chair of the committee, because I see what a struggle it is, and I see so many people who are invested in helping others. But without the state kicking in more money and a better attitude, I don't know what's going to happen. So, for example, we did an opioid tax, a surcharge, right, that distributors and manufacturers had to pay. The money from that didn't go into the treatment and education sector. It went into the general fund.
This is a sector of our healthcare system that needs to be shored up. But some of the things we talked about, the waivers for telemedicine have been very, very helpful. The waivers on medication-assisted treatment used to be you have to get a prescription in person. Now it can be done remotely.
One of the things that happened when we went into shutdown mode and clinics were no longer open, and so a lot of clinics, almost all clinics, shifted very quickly to telemedicine and telehealth services. There was a much greater participation by people in counseling sessions than you know, in many programs.
While some silver linings have emerged from the shutdown, this is a new phase of the opioid crisis that lawmakers and advocates say can't be ignored. They say that's going to take a special focus and commitment to meet this new challenge.
This is one place where I think it's critically important for us to do some self-reflecting and acknowledge the fact that if we do in fact cut funding, if we do in fact stop working on all of the advancements that we've collectively made, that people will lose their lives. It's that simple. I mean, we wouldn't turn our back on dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic. We certainly shouldn't be turning our back on the work that we're doing in this space.
We have to get serious about it. We have to treat it with the same level of respect for the magnitude of the problem. We've got to meet the magnitude of the problem with a solution of the same magnitude.
Of course, we'll be tracking the state's opioid crisis as it continues here in New York, but we'll leave it there for this week. Check out our website every day for daily news coverage from the state capitol. That's at nynow.org. But until then, thanks for watching this week's New York Now. Have a great week and be well.